College football fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to talk some college football. And time again throughout the years when we've done this here College Ball Show, we've made a point to say college football has the best regular season out of any team sport, professional, college, whatever. The regular season during college football, the fact that it means so much, the fact that so much crazy stuff can happen. Once again, we can say it, but the reason why we say it, you know, cliches are cliches for a reason. It just proved it once again in week six. I mean, it's one thing for Alabama to lose for the first time in 100 times to an unranked squad. Now, A&M was ranked earlier this year, but let's face it, they just haven't looked that good. So Bama falls, they got an L. That's a big deal, right? Obviously, that was crazy. They almost came back, and I mean, they almost won it. But then we had just, I mean, talk about rivalry games in Oklahoma, Texas, the back and forth and that, and a major comeback from Oklahoma. Now they have a quarterback controversy, to say the least. Ole Miss sneaks by Arkansas 52-51 in the SEC. Michigan barely gets by Nebraska. Penn State, Iowa. Injury happens to Penn State. Boom. Iowa wins 23-20. I mean, we even had, Virginia Tech almost beat Notre Dame. Wake Forest had to go to overtime against Syracuse, and not in basketball. Navy almost upset a ranked team in SMU. It was a wild, wild week in the sport of college football. We're going to start the show by breaking all that stuff down. Then we'll look to next week, week seven. We do have some interesting games. Oklahoma State and Texas ranked versus ranked. Georgia's versus Kentucky, 1-11. And when you look at the point spread, man, Vegas is living on the edge. They are just tempting us with this point spread, 23.5 points to a solid Kentucky squad with a good defense. So there's more matchups beyond that, too. Arizona State and Utah, right now it's sitting there at a pick 'em. So there's some really interesting games that we'll definitely get into, preview predictions and all that good stuff. And, you know, the crappy pick of the week didn't quite turn out how we'd like it, but it did make ESPN. So we'll get into the College Ball Show in just a second. But if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadope radio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope It Open and download the show directly there or listen to the browser if you don't want to. You can find this here College Ball Show under the Rope It Open Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM. Tune in. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. The prices start as low as $69.99 a month. The best of live TV and on demand, no annual contract, no hidden fees. If you upgrade to the Choice or Ultimate Package, that'll give you 3 free months of HBO Max. Plus, you get to enjoy regional sports networks with no additional fees. If you go to the Premier Package, that'll give you HBO Max and Showtime for free. That's DirecTV Stream. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and pass it off to my co-host, Marshall, see how he's doing on this early Tuesday night, I should say.
Life is good, man. Had a good round of golf. I actually had a handful of good rounds of golf with my dad. Played actually some actually, pretty cool, Chris. They have two courses in the Dallas area where the courses are made to replicate famous golf holes either overseas or in America. So we did a replica course of Scotland, and then we did a replica course of American holes. So actually, it was really cool, fun little golf.
Did they have the tall grass and everything like that?
They didn't have the tall grass. They definitely kind of have the way, you know, they kind of have like the burns, like the water, you know, they kind of have the little, it's like the little ditches with like the bridges. And then, for the European course, I avoided pop bunkers. And then for the American course we played, yesterday, they had like the 17 in sawgrass, which was really cool.
Oh, nice.
And then the last three holes in the American course were eight man's corners. So we did 11, 12, and 13 at Augusta for 16, 17, 18, and actually parred the last two holes of the day. So it was a fun golf weekend, but also we watched a lot of good football Saturday. Sadly, our Saturday tee time, we played from about 4:30 to 7:30. So I did miss the Penn State Iowa game, which on a regular weekend, you could say, could have been the game of the week that we could start off with. Or you could also say that Ole Miss and my boy Lane Kiffin could have been the game of the week. But sadly, both of those games neither make the game of the week because Nick Saban lost the game to an unranked opponent. And it's funny because there was a press clipping, which I'm sure you saw, that leaked out of Jimbo Fisher saying, I believe he's speaking to like some like boosters or like some friends or just kind of BS. And he's like, yeah, sometime when I'm down A&M, we're going to kick Nick Saban's ass. And they told Saban that prior to the game. And Nick Saban was like, is he going to beat me in golf? You know, which is a pretty, you know, fair reply from Saban. But to give credit to Jimbo, A&M won, Chris. And my biggest takeaway from the game, which blows my mind, I mean, aside from the fact it was a marvelous football game, but it was the first time I can recall in maybe since we've known each other. And I mean, our friendship now has been over about 13, 14 years, that Alabama just really got outplayed the line of scrimmage. It's one thing for Bama to lose, and Bama has lost a couple of games through overtime where you're playing a versatile quarterback and, you know, you've had the Johnny Manziels or the Bo Wallaces or, you know, some Florida teams, and, you know, they've had their moments. But again, I think maybe baffled is the right word, Chris, because A&M had four sacks against Bama, which is super high for Bama to allow in a close competitive game. And you could just tell there was no true over. I mean, and I know Bama scored 38, so I'm not trying to sound like an idiot here, but they did not have the cohesive, like, we're going to own the line of scrimmage. Our offense will dictate what we're going to do. A&M's D-line had been getting a lot of credit this year, Chris, and they stepped up and earned it. I can't recall a game where Bama's O-line just didn't look as to be the dominant force. And I mean, this is a team, I'm sure some of those guys will be going to the NFL. It seems like every year Saban has a lineman that does go pro in the first round or two. But massive credit to A&M's defense. And because I know it was a relatively high scoring game, but you kept Bama's offense in check. You kept momentum. You stepped it up later when Bama took the lead and you still come back to one. But it was just, and I'll stop it now because I'm repeating myself for the third time, but it's worth saying, is that Bama really lost the line of scrimmage about as much as I've ever seen them lose it. And it just baffles me because that's something that just normally never, ever happens.
Yeah, I mean, they did have to throw the ball 48 times. That's something that normally doesn't happen. They did have a running back go for a buck 47. So I wouldn't say that they were like handled like that. And then on the flip side, they only got 94 yards rushing Texas A&M. So I wouldn't necessarily say that was like the 100% thing. I mean, Christ, they outgained them 522 to 379. So I wouldn't say that's the overwhelming thing, but I think your point is well taken in many ways like that. And they did get off to a nice ass lead. You know, they were able to, you know, they caused a fumble early on. They got them to punt a couple of times, which it sounds funny, you know, but Bama doesn't punt a ton anyway. And if you look at it, looking at it right now, you know, there's a good four or five punts in there. But the biggest thing for me, what I thought was really interesting is, like you said, that A&M was able to come back in the game, even though all of a sudden they were down. You know, that was like, uh-oh, dude, they're not going to win this now. That was fun and games and all that. But it's 38-31 now. They're not going to come back and win this. And, you know, to tie it up and then to get them to 3 and out with 1 yard, you know, three plays, 1 yard, didn't even burn a minute. And that's where – that's usually the bread and butter there. So that was key, man. And you know, A&M had been hyped up as a top 10 team, and they played at Colorado, looked like crap. They just didn't look like their ranking at all. But in this game, you know, and the, you know, there was a block punt in there for a touchdown and whatnot too for Bama. So I mean, it's,
yeah,
it wasn't like this, you know, just a bunch of random stuff happened for A&M. There was some random stuff on the other side too, but yeah, it's of course it had to happen at some point. Bama under Saban lose to an unranked team, but that's pretty damn impressive. 100 games without losing to an unranked squad. That and they play, being in the SEC, you know, they play a lot of, you know, they play a pretty tough schedule, and yeah, it's pretty surprising, even with like Auburn as a rival, or you know, just LSU, like even in a down year catch them slipping, or just some sort of non-conference catch them slipping. But yeah, man, that was big. And let's see, you know, if A&M can actually use this, you know, going forward and have a great, you know, great season in general. It was funny because we were talking about, you know, you picked that crappy pick of the week. You picked it out. I picked actually this week the losers. Now we move to 4-2. But I always DVR the college football final, little hour recap show. There's, you know, stats and just kind of whatever stuff that you can kind of breeze through. But this is how they led the show to begin with.
So how do we begin an all-time Saturday in college football? Well, with UConn and UMass, of course, 26 straight losses combined. Fourth quarter, UMass up 3. Alice Merriweather, 1 yard touchdown. Oh my goodness, virtual lock implications. America had the Huskies. 5 minutes left. Zamir Wise takes the handoff for the touchdown. They are starting to feel it in Amherst. Probably the weirdest taking of a knee of all time. And rejoice, Minutemen.
And the crowd stormed the field. They figure, hey man, we paid $22 for these. These tickets, we're going to freaking get our money's worth. We're hitting the field up there in Amherst. That was pretty funny because that's happened one other time to us. So I just had to get that out of the way. But that was a damn good win by A&M. And, you know, we talked about how it didn't really feel like there was great teams this year yet. And this might be a year that Bama loses and that we have some 2-loss teams possibly get in. Cincinnati is sitting there like, hey, man, now we just got to finish undefeated. Let's hope that SMU is undefeated till we get to them, and then they stay unbeaten beyond, you know, Cincinnati losing. I suppose SMU would like that, too, to beat Cincinnati. But, you know, Cincinnati's got to be liking the fact that Bama lost. But in the same breath, if they come back, win all their games, and beat Georgia, let's say, Georgia's only lost. This is just theoretical, but let's say Georgia's only loss is Bama, and then Bama beat them. They're the number one team. Well, you know, both of them are getting in. So it's a catch-22, but damn, this year is just all over the place, and we just don't know. Let's keep the ball rolling. Iowa and Penn State. Penn State came out, you know, really gunning. They were playing solid defense. Speaking of 3 and outs, it was either 3 and outs or, you know, making a punt or turning the ball over. They got off to a really nice start, got up 17-3. You know, right away, Iowa answered to make it 17-10. So at half, you're like 17-10. There was a pick in there. Then an injury as well to the quarterback there, and that was good enough. You know, they did actually get up 10 points again, 20-10. But a field goal, another field goal, and a touchdown late, you know, and then some turnovers on downs, interceptions, a lot of, I mean, look at this. Both teams, turnovers on downs, punt, interception, turnover on downs, turnover on downs. That's how the game ended. 23-20, Iowa stays unbeaten. And now Penn State, you know, who still had Michigan State and Michigan and Ohio State to play, now they got to get their quarterback healthy. And then if you look for Iowa, if you look at Iowa, I should say, most of their, like, they don't have a, as of right now anyway, a lot of their toughest games are out of the way. They don't have, like I said, as of now, a ranked team on their schedule. A couple weeks they play, you know, in a month or so they play the Gophers, like maybe Nebraska. Like, there's just, it's clean sailing on the surface. They did hold the ball for 35 minutes. That was one of the keys down the stretch, but they got it done on the road at Iowa. It's just tough, man.
This, again, quoting our years of doing this podcast, years I've known you, this has to be the worst offense I've ever seen of a team that's ranked second in the country. I mean, credit to the win. You're undefeated. You've beat teams you need to beat. But this, Chris, this offense, like, normally when you think college football, you think offense. Like, okay, like, yeah, there's back in the day, like, the, I mean, I don't know, like Baltimore Ravens, like, you know, had a good, like, there's a couple teams you can go throughout just football history and you think, okay, defense. But I'm so used to an elite college football team. Now I will say your Hurricanes had an elite defense because, hell, it seems like almost every guy in that defense went pro, like, you know, going back to the 2000s. But you almost never see a college football team that is truly has a average offense at best. And average might even be too much. But in the past two games against Maryland and Penn State, this Iowa defense has forced 11 turnovers. Like, I credit to him. But Petras is not a good quarterback at all. Yet Iowa keeps winning games. It just baffles me. It makes me blow my mind that just this shit offense keeps winning. But when your defense is just balling out week after week after week, like, I got to tip my cap. It just it strikes me as one of these weekends, Chris, will Iowa's defense not score? Will Iowa's defense take a week off? Will they maybe give themselves a break? I don't know. I'm not used to seeing a team like this who is so dominant on one side of the ball, and it doesn't involve an offense. So it was a great
comeback. Wasn't that a lot of the complaints, though, of the SEC about 8 years ago? It's all defense, no offense. They got a pretty good running back, I'll tell you that. I don't know if you've seen Goodson, but he's a baller.
He is, and I guess you give Penn State some credit. But, I mean, you know, Iowa ran the ball 45 times for a 110. That's, you know, 2.5 yards a carry. That's nothing to brag home about. I just every week, and Iowa wins these games, but every week it's literally, I mean, Iowa State defense made a ton of big plays against Maryland. The defense turned over that baby Tua, the quarterback from Maryland. Like, he had no interceptions going into the game. Then he had like 5 turnovers in a game. Penn State, 4 interceptions. Like, I'm just, this Iowa defense is just played out of their mind. And I think eventually it's going to catch up to Iowa, because I don't think this offense is good enough. But hey, they're number 2 in the country now. They keep winning games. And you said the easy part of their schedule is coming. But hell, if you're this Iowa team, and credit to this defense, they're playing lights out every week. Your offense is doing enough to get by. But hell, Petras, Iowa's quarterback, 17 for 31, 195, 2 touchdowns and a pick, a quarterback rating of 50. It just, I don't know. I got nothing. But hey, credit to Iowa. Keep winning ugly. Keep forcing 4 to 5 turnovers a game. And just, props them. It's just, you almost never see this. And even with some of those SEC teams.
When's Iowa had a good offense? That's my question then. What's their best quarterback then? Who's their best quarterback?
Stanley is, but we've also,
this is Iowa.
Stanley is nothing to brag about. Right. Yeah, but we've never seen
him be Iowa, though.
True, but we've never seen him be number 2, you know, in the country.
Well, we saw them unbeaten a handful of years ago, but remember they went all the way through the season unbeaten. They had to have been at least top five at that point. But, yeah, I hear what you're saying. But, you know, they're really not number two, though, because nobody's nothing right now, if we're being honest. I don't think they – would they be two for sure? I don't know. That's a good question because they played a good schedule based off of early season rankings. They played a really good schedule based off of early season rankings. But now when you add it up, it's not as much. But they got the job done either way. But, yeah, it's really not shocking because this is Iowa. They generally don't have a good offense. But speaking of offense, Marshall, Oklahoma and Texas. And first and foremost, I thought you were going a little over the top, you know, with the benching. I thought, let's slow down a little bit, Marshall. I don't know if he's going to get benched, the quarterback I'm speaking of from the Sooners. It's funny because Texas came right down and boom, they were up 14-0. Oklahoma had a nice drive, made it 14-7, but it was 28-7 after that long ass run by a Heisman candidate himself. It was 35-17, 38-20 at half, for Christ's sakes, you know. Texas has just got to be sitting at home, go, and they had a tough game coming up. Are they going to be able to get up for it? It's one thing to say, be like, hey man, they're a pretty good squad, sure, but the heartbreak, you know, the mindset. What's the mindset of Texas after this one? But they had control of it. Half of the place was going crazy. Rattler started struggling, and they brought in the true freshman, Caleb Williams. He was a five-star recruit. I think he was the second ranked under ESPN in the country. So he definitely comes in there with some pedigree, but he hasn't played a whole lot this year. He pops off. Yeah, he's thrown 11 times into this game, and it was in garbage time. The freshman, the true freshman, brings him back. And it was crazy, too, because then they got up, I think it was like 48-41, and they still tied the game and came back. I mean, when we think of the Big 12, we think of offense, and that's exactly what this game was, man.
Yeah, and speaking of my dad being in town, I kept telling him the whole game. I was like, hey, just so you know, Texas's defense is not that good. Their secondary has had issues with lots of teams, and I just kept telling him. Even though they were looking very dominant on offense, I'm like, yeah, just give it time. Like, Oklahoma's going to score. And they did score in bunches when Rattler did get benched, and that offense got a rhythm to it. And then it became just a big shootout. And that was just a true great classic rivalry game that had tons of momentums. I was at a sports bar that was, I would say, probably 95% Texas, and there were some OU fans that would sprinkle and do some clapping. But that really was a great college football rivalry game to enjoy. I also simply like the fact that you almost had a walk-off run. You almost never have a walk-off.
They were setting up for the field goal. They were literally setting up for the field goal. It's like, nah, we'll score.
The design, we were talking before the show, I'm kind of ripping on Lincoln because it seems like he's really hesitant to pull the covers off of Rattler and let the new kid take quarterback. But to give Lincoln Riley a ton of credit, the play they designed for the end of the game that was the perfect timeout. And this guy is an offensive genius. I think he's proven it. Maybe this year they've had their issues, but this offense this year is – he's always been an X's and O's guy, but they basically came up with kind of like a wildcat offense. And for whatever play call that was, where the ball was snapped to the running back, that was the perfect play call. Whatever Texas's defense was in, they clearly misread it. But yeah, we were looking at overtime or a potential game winning field goal. And as you've seen this week, well, any week, there's never a guaranteed field goal in college or pro this week or this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, all right, overtime. Like, hell, Mason Crosby one of the best kickers in the world, missed three field goals in a row. Like, you never want to take things for granted, especially in college, because college kickers are not reliable. So, all right, cool, we'll have an overtime game. And then you dial up the play of the year, and again, whatever motion they had with their Wildcat play was perfect. And that's a hell of a comeback by Oklahoma. To be down to your rival anywhere from 17 to 21 points for a good chunk of the game, even in the mid-third quarter, to be down over two touchdowns and come back to win, that's a huge win by them. That's a huge gut punch to Texas. And to give credit to Texas's offense under Sarkisian has done really well this year, actually amazingly well. But their defense, obviously, as I was telling my dad, they had issues this year, and those issues got exposed. But surprisingly, Chris, they're playing Oklahoma State, who's ranked 12th, yet Texas is somehow favored this week against Oklahoma State off of a heartbreaking loss, and you're playing, in theory, a team better than you. Vegas must really be seeing something I'm not, because after that loss, and you're playing a team who's got a good defense, I'm not quite sure why we'll get to it. But yeah, Texas, that's a tough loss to take, and yet you're somehow favored after what had to be just a rivalry game like that. That's a gut punch. And Oklahoma, hey, you've not looked really great any week at all this year, but you're still undefeated, and you're still top in the land. So credit to them. But yeah, credit to the kid coming in. Clearly everyone who's played in the Oklahoma Texas game, that's as big as, you know, Carolina Duke basketball, like Yankees Red Sox, like whatever rivalry you want to get in America. Oklahoma Texas is huge. It's at the State Fair in Dallas. They split the crowd 50-50, and this kid basically comes in cold and leads together a hell of a comeback. That was a tremendous job, as you said, Caleb Williams. And Lincoln's really got his hand forced now, because if you're an Oklahoma fan, you must be one that kid come in and put Rattler to the side for a while. We'll be interesting to see how that turns out, Chris, this week for who the starting quarterback is for Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye on that. In that position, Oklahoma trailed Texas 21 points. Prior to that, in the FBS, when you're up 21 points, the teams, Texas, just any team in the FBS up 21 was 208-2 prior to that comeback.
Wow.
So that's pretty intense, I would have to say. We'll get to that Oklahoma game and Texas game. I mean, Oklahoma's played some good teams, but they don't have – well, we'll get into that. Before we get into all that, though, let's talk about another just shootout, this time not in the Big East. This one was an SEC shootout. You figure Ole Miss could do shootouts. Now Arkansas, we know, can do shootouts as well. 52-51. And this thing was just back and forth pretty much the whole time. I mean, you could literally see, you know, 14-14 from a two-point conversion, 21-14. I think the biggest lead, there it is, 10-point, 24-14. Otherwise, back and forth, we went 24-24, 31-24, 31-31, and so on and so on and so on. For good reason. We talked about how, you know, the quarterback at Ole Miss, Carroll, you know, he had a damn good game through the air. They didn't throw a ton, but when you combo up the 94 yards, two touchdowns, almost 300 yards through the air, two touchdowns, that was a hell of a day. But then you look at Jefferson, KJ Jefferson from Arkansas, oh boy, threw for over 300 yards, three touchdowns, and he ran for three as well, and I think he had like 80 some yards. So I noticed that Jefferson, because we've seen this Ole Miss quarterback from last year too, so we're a little bit more familiar. But this Jefferson is just cool and calm in the pocket. Both these guys, at times they look like, hey dude, move a little bit, and also they're like, oh, like this, and then they'll spin out and just chuck the ball 30 yards. I mean, it was a quarterback duel. And it was fun to watch, no doubt about it. What did you think about the two-point conversion? Because I got to admit, I thought it was a good call. First of all, they had it going. Second of all, it just didn't seem – it seemed like, you know what, they're probably better than us on offense, So why are we even going to keep trying to do this? Let's just try to win it here. What says you about that, though? Because they could have went to overtime.
You know, and we've always played this game before, and sometimes I rip the coaches, sometimes I don't. This time I won't. I mean, I would rip the play call. Because you just talked about a quarterback in KJ Jefferson who was 25 of 35 for 326, which is remarkable. But he also, Chris, ran the ball 20 times for 85 yards. And he's a big ass dude. Like he kind of has like a Cam Newton type body. Like he's not, I wouldn't say your typical quarterback. Like he's very big and built and stocky, but moves really well for his size. And when you it's like they did kind of like a flood right play where like they snapped the ball and he rolled out to his right and so did Ole Miss's defense. So I thought, honestly, if I was Arkansas, hell, let him run, like at least give him a chance to run the ball in, you know, whatever. But no, I thought that was a good play call because Ole Miss's offense was going to keep scoring the games and Ole Miss, you're on the road. Your defense was clearly not going to stop them, but Ole Miss really hadn't stopped you either. So I completely support going for two, you know, and going for the win. And I'm sure if they do the play again, maybe they dial up the right play call and they get it. But I guess my biggest takeaway is we keep moving here. God, it's been such a fun week to recap. We could probably do a whole 2-hour recap show. We've had so many games, but the biggest thing was Matt Corral, and I know I'm an Ole Miss guy, but just this was a game that he had like on his calendar. Because last year he threw 6 picks against Arkansas, 6. And like he would like there was talk about him being benched and he just played a shit game. And so you could see that this was kind of a more personal game for him. And he also ran the ball 15 times for 94 yards. So clearly this was his best performance. He was 14 for 21 for 287 yards passing. So that's a pretty good passing rate per yards. Kiffin drew up some pretty big plays and Arkansas would answer. It was really fun because I had this game on at the same time as OU in Texas. So literally about every 2 minutes when you're at the bar, someone was scoring, whether Oklahoma was in a commercial for a touchdown or Ole Miss game was in a commercial. You didn't have much time to sit down and just relax because some score was happening, Chris. So credit to Ole Miss, man, this is a tough spot for Arkansas too. We talked about them. They started off the year really hot. They whooped Texas. You know, they got up to a single digit ranking in the country, but then you walk into Georgia, which was hellfire and brimstone that game, which was tough. And then you got to play Ole Miss, which was tough. Now you got to go to, you know, play Auburn, who's not a bad team. So I think this Arkansas team is still playing a really good amount of football, and they're a good team. But when you go A&M, Georgia, Ole Miss, Auburn, that's about as beastly of a schedule as you can have, Chris. They're coming off 2 losses, but this still is a team going in the right direction. And if you're Kiffin, a good win, but you kind of don't want that defense to come back to where they were last year where you're giving up 50 a game because it appeared their defense had been a little bit better up until what Arkansas just did to them.
Yeah, no doubt, man. That was a blast. And like I said, both these quarterbacks are so calm in the pocket. And, of course, you know, neither defense was doing much, so maybe that played into it. But it was just a quarterback duel. That was really fun to watch back and forth. BYU, who was previously unbeaten, got beat by their rival Boise State. I think the last time they had 3 fumbles was 2018 when they lost to you-know-who, Boise State. So Boise State, who's had a down year, was on the road, got a win, and that was with Hall as well that was in that game. So we can't necessarily use that as excuse, something that we brought up last week. And Virginia Tech almost did against Notre Dame. Notre Dame used 2 different quarterbacks, 32-29. Like I said, Nebraska and Michigan. Nebraska may be 3-4. But they've lost. I'm really worried about this one for my Gophers because they've lost. I mean, sure, they got 1 bad loss to Illinois. But other than that, Michigan State in overtime, this game, which, you know, they turned the ball over on downs, down 32-29, and they also fumbled. Their last 2 possessions was a fumble and a turnover on downs. But they were up 29-26 fairly late in this game. They got a pretty damn good offense. And I'm wondering, you know, if my Gophers can get, you know, by him. But Michigan still unbeaten. And now the, you know, I mean, I think they have one more, mediocre game. I think they actually have a bye, then Northwestern, then Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, you know, all that stuff. So that a lot has to be still figured out on the east side in the Big Ten. And then another game. Oh, yeah, I mentioned earlier you had SMU sneaking by Navy, who's ranked now SMU. And then Wake Forest needed overtime to beat Syracuse, and not in college basketball. Kentucky just waxed LSU. LSU is hurting right now. What'd you think of some of these games I mentioned, or just in general, you know, some more games from the week before we start to preview week 7?
Well, for giving out picks, I did give out the Kentucky pick, which was the right pick. And then I gave out Sparty, which was good. And then Wake Forest, they screwed up. They won, but they were covering. And then they gave up like a stupid touchdown at the end of the game, which bothered me. But I went 2-for-1 on my main picks. But Kentucky was a good winner. And, man, Sparty, I know Rutgers isn't that good, Chris. But Sparty has a growing man running back and a stud wide receiver. Like, the Sparty running back looks like he could be an NFL-sized running back. And their starting wide receiver, who is a stud, had 5 catches, 221 yards. So Rutgers secondary, Chris, has – can I say room for improvement? Or was it one of those just like – it was pretty much like Kenneth Walker III. Or sorry, was the growing man running back, 29 carries, 232. I wanted to say a buck, but a buck would be disrespectful. He had 2 bucks. And then Jalen Naylor, 5 catches, 221 yards, average of 44 yards a catch, 3 touchdowns. I mean, you want to talk about just and again, I know Rutgers ain't great, but Rutgers also isn't a massive joke either. It's a Big Ten team, and Rutgers has been okay this year. You don't see 2 teammates normally combined for 453 yards of plays with 4 touchdowns. And the running back had a 94-yard touchdown run. So I kind of enjoyed watching Sparty just because you normally don't see teams with two playmakers like that. And, hey, they're undefeated too. So you got Michigan State and Michigan, who are both undefeated. That whole side of the bracket – is getting pretty interesting. Meanwhile, Iowa's just showing over there, Chris, playing their 4 turnover a game defense. Well, Sparty, Ohio State, and Michigan are going to have to duke it out here in a little bit. So, yeah, those were good games. As you mentioned a little bit earlier, Notre Dame is 5-1. They beat Va Tech, but could easily be 1-5. That has to be the most weirdest ranked team. Just because every game Notre Dame has played this year, besides maybe beating Toledo and Purdue somewhat confidently, kinda, like, they have a good win-loss record, but that team is having a good year, but they're not really showing it as much as you'd expect. And somehow, surprisingly, it's worth saying, Tennessee has whooped up on a team 2 weeks in a row. I mentioned this because normally they're the doormat joke of a team we talked about in the SEC, but they killed my Missouri Tigers, and LA killed South Carolina. So maybe for once, maybe Tennessee is no longer a massive joke. But, man, that was probably the best weekend we've had so far of college football. I hope we get another one like it, Chris. That was just a super, super fun weekend of watching college football. But, yeah, that watching Ole Miss and the OU game at the same time, I said it was testing my neck skills, because every time you turned around, some team was doing something, and it was a lot of fun, my friend.
Yeah, even a game like Tulsa-Memphis that came down to the wire 35-29 late Saturday night. I remember I watched that after I got home after that heavyweight fight. That, speaking of crazy, that heavyweight fight was crazy. Yeah, I mean, there was just like, this year is just – we talked about it, you know, a handful of times so far. After week 4, the most, you know, upsets in the AP poll history back from 1936. This is a perfect example. North Carolina, top 10 team. Florida State just beat them, and they beat them by 10 points. It wasn't a close game. So, yeah, everything will happen this year. It really feels like you just don't know.
And, sorry, by the way, I got to tell you, you know, the UTEP Miners, a team who appears consistently every year on the Crafty Crappy Pick of the Week.
Yeah.
Is 5-1, first place in Conference USA. This is a team who I know they have a certain adult film star, great actress, and other people, because we always pick them in our alumni battle. This team has been on the Crafty Crab Pick this year and years prior. They're probably our most go-to team. Is 5-1 and is leading a conference, Chris. College football this year makes no sense when a team who's normally one of the worst in the nation is 5-1 and leading their damn conference. And I don't care who Conference USA is, it can't be that bad. They're a Division I football conference team. And the UTEP Miners, who you've broken down numerous times and done so well laughing, is leading their conference.
They got a guy named Frank Harris, right? Last week against Western Kentucky in a 52-46 win. It's funny that you mentioned this, because I was going to say something like that. He threw 28. These are not the stats we're used to reading. 28-38 for 349 and count them, 6 touchdowns through the air. And he caught a pass. He caught a pass. So 7 total touchdowns. This Frank threw for 6 TDs, dude. They'll never be in the Crafty Crappy Pick of the Week ever again. I mean, just based off that stat line right there. That was crazy, man. Unbelievable. Yeah, that's so funny you're going to say that, because that was literally going to be my next thing I was going to say. Hey, we've heard of this team before, and what do you know? Speaking of what do you know, Vegas, man, they are playing with us. They're teasing us with this Georgia and Kentucky game, 1-11, right? Ranked versus ranked, SEC on the East. This is a big, big game on the left side of that bracket, right? If you're looking at a dead center. I mean, this is a big game, Marshall. They're both undefeated. Kentucky's got a defense. They both love to run the ball. That's what they do, run the ball, protect the ball, and play defense. 23 points. Oh, it went down. Last night it was 23.5. Of course, it was just 22.5 when it opened. 23-point spread, and you're looking at it, and you're just like, 20? Now, can they beat them by 23 points? Yeah, of course they can. They can, but damn, it just kind of seems like, are we sure this is going to happen? What says you about this? Because this is like the marquee matchup. But in Vegas, it's just it's a Crafty Crappy Pick of the Week, I guess.
I'm not going to get fooled by it, because I think that you could say that Kentucky and Arkansas are both relatively pretty similar teams. Sure. And the Arkansas spread was 18.5, and that game was a beat down. And you can say that he didn't run up the score because they're boys. You know, Kirby and Pittman are friends. I don't know what Bob Stoops and Kirby's friendship is, but I could easily see a very similar game again, because this is a Georgia defense that is the best in the land. I mean, people say they've still only given up like what, 40 points this year or something, or like 39. So you've given up 39 points through the first 6 weeks of football. And Kentucky has also got they've got 2 defensive linemen starting who are out. So you're going to run the ball down their throat like George does against everyone. And I know that Kentucky's offense has improved this year, but they're still really a defensive based team. And I would imagine that, you know, George has faced offenses that are just as good. So I'm not saying I would go bet George at the window, but I would do that and stay away before I bet Kentucky, because that was a madhouse when Arkansas walked in there, and it'll be a madhouse again when Kentucky walks in there. And I would be very gun shy to go against this Georgia defense, just because I don't think Kentucky's offense is going to be able to do a whole lot. And with Kentucky being such a great physical team in the trenches, like I predicted when they beat LSU, when you have a couple of linemen who are your main part of your team on your defense go out for injury, that's a huge loss already. Georgia really controls the line of scrimmage, and you have injuries on top of that, and you're going to Georgia. I think there's a whole lot of things going in the wrong direction, Chris. So I'm not gonna call out Vegas. We did that. I was giving them crap about the Vegas line for Ole Miss and Bama, and they missed that by a point. And they were also dead on with that Arkansas Georgia game too. They actually were under that one. So yeah, it makes you shake your head.
Well, I'm saying it's teaser. I'm not calling them out saying what the hell are they doing. I'm saying it's tempting, is what I'm saying.
You're right. It is. But I'm not gonna go for it just because I can see, I've seen too much from Georgia to want to take a team. Yeah, I can't go against them. We'll see. Yeah, I would take Georgia to cover just because they've been the most consistent, well played football team in the land this year so far.
Yeah, and they, they, like I said, it doesn't matter really. They got two quarterbacks that can play, so that helps them. One's a little bit more mobile. One has a better arm.
Sure.
They are due to play a tight game because they haven't played one since Clemson. You know, a tight, tight game. So that's the only thing I'd keep the door open to. But I knew one of them was out, but I didn't know both of the top guys were out. But I really still think that people are going to take that because they're going to go, seriously, dude? I mean, man, it's well placed. And obviously Vegas knows what they're doing, obviously. But I just think it's a great teaser because it's one of these things where you're like, and we saw that with Bama as well when they opened up 20 and then it went to 14. They ended up winning by 20, you know. So it's one of those things that I think that it's a great tease because people are going to jump on that. I really do. I'm with you. I just wouldn't touch it. I still think they're going to play another tight game against maybe a team that the spread doesn't say it. But I hear you. I think Georgia will win the game and they should probably win it by that much. But I do think it's an interesting one. And let's go to the Oklahoma State Texas game that you mentioned earlier. 5.5 points is still staying pretty strong. Now, obviously, you know, this is the offense against defense feel to it. Oklahoma State, give it up 18.6 compared to 29.2. Baylor's probably the only team they played that has a good offense. I'll say that. We can't lose sight of that. And then playing Oklahoma, Arkansas, and who else did they play that was pretty good? Texas at the beginning of the year. Oh, our Raging Cajuns. Like, they do have a good defense, no doubt about it. It seems like for sure on paper. But the way Texas, if they can get it going, they need to run the ball in this one, obviously. You know, they're averaging 245 yards on the ground per game. Now, they're giving up 200 compared to 91, 91 to 198, that's double. So, like you said, there is issues there, but I think that's the key. They have to use that, just absolute stud Robinson, who's almost up to 800 yards already in 8 TDs. I think they got to ride him, not only because he's a damn good player, but then it'll burn the clock and keep, their defense off. And I just wonder about mind state. I mean, it's hard not to, as a pro team, you'd have to ask the question, what's their mind state right now, and it does look like Oklahoma State has kind of gotten better and better as they've gone up, the ladder here. They did they got a bye week as well. They're coming out probably their best all-around performance against a pretty good Baylor team. Boise State down, like we said before, but they just got a good win. So this one's kind of interesting, man. I'm actually picking Texas, but with no confidence at all, because I really don't know what their mindset is. Like, they could either – it's really one or – you know, one or the other. It's either you're totally focused and you're pissed and you want to, you know, just motivate, like, look at what we can do this time. Let's not give up the lead. Or, you know, that stuff lingers in your head and you come out flat.
And I'm going to go with choice B. You know, we talk a lot about.
I can't believe you're picking against Texas. I never thought I'd see the day.
Yeah, horns down, baby, horns down. I sent many photos in my group chat this week of horns down. So, yeah, I just think that you come off of what could have been such a huge victory against your rival, and then you have it to where you have basically a heartbreaking loss. So I just think that, and especially you're getting 5.5 points, too. That's a lot of points for you're playing a team that, you know, for all we know, is pretty similar skill set. So I'll take Oklahoma State coming off a good win and time to be healthy versus a Texas team whose defense just has to just be, you know, I don't know. I don't even know where you start. You know, they got to just be struggling right now. So I will take Oklahoma State to cover, and hopefully they beat Texas, and I hope that streak continues. But, yeah, hey, again, Texas's offense, they're doing everything right. Like, Sark with that new offense, the pro-style offense he did in USC, that offense is working. It's just – they got to figure out the other end of the ball, and I think that still will be an issue that will still linger into this week for them, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, you got a pick'em game in the on the West Coast, 9 o'clock, the Pac-12 after dark. Arizona State, who's now looking good. They lost to BYU early. Now they're looking really good. They're 5-1. They took care of a good Stanford club, some other good wins. Utah kind of bounced back, smacked, you know, the Trojans around a little bit. And don't get too mad at me, because my Hurricanes are getting smacked around. And they lost, and they lost their quarterback for the year, King, his shoulder. So I really feel bad for him, because he could have just went pro and maybe been on a roster someplace. I think that's a good game on the road even. I'm going to go Arizona State there. Another one, BYU coming off that loss to Boise State. On the road at Baylor, who's a pretty good club. I could see that one going down to the wire. Baylor's a 6-point favorite.
Yeah, USC is just having a really I don't know, whatever. They're having a crappy year, and they're not worth talking about right now, so I'll keep it that way. For Baylor, like you were saying, what a weird team. I said that Virginia line, that West Virginia line looked really fishy. And that was the game where I was like, why is that a 3-point spread? Like, nothing seemed to add up. Like, West Virginia been playing good football. Baylor had that bad loss to Oklahoma State. And then you drop 45 and win 45-20. So, I mean, is this Baylor team the one who beat Iowa State and whooped West Virginia, or the one who really struggled to move the ball on offense against Oklahoma State? I guess it's hard to say. And if you're BYU, when your quarterbacks are healthy, you've looked like one of the better teams in the country. But then you go and lay an egg against Boise State, who, for their standards, is really having an off year. So I would stay away from that one. I will take Baylor just to pick them in the game. But those are two teams who have just been kind of having interesting seasons that are a little hard to comprehend. Also, I was talking about Sparty about 10 minutes ago. With the stud running back and the stud wide receiver, they go to Indiana, and they're only a 4.5-point favorite. I would look to take them to win. This is an Indiana team who at the start of the year was getting a lot of hype, and I believe they started the season like ranked like anywhere from like 13th to 16th in the preseason polls. And they had such a great year last year with such an inspirational rah-rah coach that everyone loves. But then you come off and start the season and your quarterback is hurt in Penix, and they just haven't quite got onto a roll. And if you're Sparty, hell, you got to keep winning as many games as you can until you get to Michigan and Ohio State. So I think that offense, which from what I can see, it looked really loaded. I think they're going to win that game, Chris. It won't surprise me. I mean, it's a Big Ten game. I could see Indiana put up a fight. They're not a joke of a team, but they're clearly not the hype they were earlier. So I would look to bet. I bet Sparty last week, bet Sparty again. I think that they'll cash another ticket with the -4.5 in Bloomington, Indiana.
Yeah, and as far as like hardcore barn burners that you want to take a or keep an eye on as they head into the second half and in the fourth quarter, Nebraska at Minnesota, 3.5 points. Can they beat a good but still trying to figure out what they are this year Minnesota squad? I think that'll be interesting. We talked about how Auburn is not just a push-around team. Arkansas has got to get their stuff together. You know, after that loss, they're a 3.5-point favorite at home. That's not going to be completely easy. Look at that. UConn and Yale are playing. I just saw that. Wow, hey, I wonder if that's going to be something that we talk about. Another couple games before we get to the crafty, crappy pick of the week. Look at UTSA 6-0, 18.5-point spread over Rice. Wow. Like I said, those days are gone now. They got themselves a quarterback. Oh, yeah, Boston College. NC State. NC State is a favorite on the road by 3. Upset special of the week. Boston College gets the job done. Are we that confident with Iowa State that they're a 6.5-point favorite on the road at Kansas State? I don't know. You tell me. I'm not quite sure there. Ukala, a 2-point underdog at Washington. Who has Washington beat? I like that game. Air Force Boise State. That's going to be a competitive game. A lot of hardcore barn burners and like minor 3.5-4-point upsets in my mind this week.
Yeah, and hey, speaking of teams that people love to bet, Bama is always a very popular team. I'm sure people will be running to the window to bet first half Bama. They're a 17-point favorite going to Mississippi State. And this is a Mississippi State team who I know they're 3-2, but pretty much Mike Leach, every game they seem to coach is always interesting and close. I think he's slowly getting his team set up to how he wants it from, you know, his Washington State days. So I would never, I'm not taking Mississippi State. I think Alabama is going to have a pretty spirited practice this week, Chris. I'm guessing Saban's a little bit upset, but maybe Bama -10 first half probably wouldn't be a bad idea. Cause I'm guessing, yeah, Bama's probably going to come out a little extra motivated, after a loss. I cannot imagine practice was that fun, this past week. And, speaking of Tennessee, who again is been playing lights out lately. Holy shit, Chris, the over under for Tennessee hosting Ole Miss is 82. The over-under for a college football SEC game, and I know we got some high-profile offenses here, is 82 points. I don't think I've ever seen an over-under of 82. That is, wow. I'm
Dude,
taking Ole Miss.
According to ESPN's Football Power Index, they favor the Volunteers 53.8% to come. Oh, we might have an upset right here. Only a 3-point. I mean, they're playing better, but who are they beating? They're playing better, but who are they beating? They played Florida, got their ass kicked. Played Pitt, lost. Who are they beating to be at home with a 3-point spread to Ole Miss? Interesting.
I got
82. You're right. Just shootout central.
Dear, that is a massively, massively high point spread
in the
Dear
SEC
Lord.
Once again. This is the we're not this isn't the Big 12 or you know 10, 15 years ago the Pac 12. This is the SEC, folks.
That's special. That is a I got nothing. That's a very high point spread. Jesus Chris, that's truly something else. But yeah, it seems like we don't maybe have quite as high caliber of games as we had last week, but again, we've said this before, like sometimes the best weeks of college football are the weeks when you don't have the high profile games. Now, obviously I don't expect this week to match last week at all. We'd be getting selfish there. But when you want to talk about, again, a game that's going to be close, Nebraska plays everyone close and Nebraska comes up to play your Gophers. What does your gut tell you on that one, my friend?
I mean, I've mentioned it a couple times on the show. I don't know if you've been listening. I'm nervous as hell. I mean, they got an offense. Like I said, beyond that Illinois game, Like, they got beat by Illinois. We know that. But other than that, they lost to Michigan. They're unbeaten, lost to Michigan State in OT, and Michigan State needed, like, a punt return to go there. They almost beat Oklahoma. Of course, you know, a variety of people have almost beat Oklahoma. But I don't know, man. We're you know, the Trey Potts who took over for Mo Ibrahim, this dude was, like, 550 yards so far in four games. He's just been killing it. We don't actually know what's wrong with him, but my guess is there's something wrong inside. I don't mean that like his feelings. I mean like a spleen or something major, because he had in Purdue, he had to stay. They right during the game, they took him to the hospital. He had to stay in the hospital for like a week. He's out now. He's doing better, but he's not playing again. So now we're on our third running back this year. It's a true freshman, and then we have a vet, Williams, who's actually played a decent amount over, say, the last 4 years or whatever. But they do get all their wide receivers back, so that's why I'm hoping the Gophers are going to win that. So my gut's saying the Gophers are going to win it because they have all their wide receivers back, but they got to throw the ball over 20-some-odd times this week. Because Nebraska, they can score. They can score, no doubt about it. But, yeah, it's been a rough one. To have a backup for Mo Ibrahim, who was an All-American-type running back, it was like, oh, shit, man, this is awesome. But now we're on our third and fourth string.
Yeah, that's tough. And that's, I mean, anytime you get to third string anything, it's your skill set is dropping down 99% of the time, my friend.
But his name is Bucky. Just remember that. Irving, okay? Bucky.
Fair enough.
He might go for 100 yards. You never know. Let's get to this crappy pick. We're over an hour, folks.
Cool. All right. Well, I always like to keep the point spread close. With that said, I'm keeping this fair. We're actually going to stay in our neck of the woods. We're actually going because for the closest point spread and two teams that are not that good this year, especially when one gives up video game Madden-type numbers to someone I talked about a little while ago. We're going Big Ten football. We're going a game that's actually on the Big Ten Network. This game is an 11 o'clock a.m. Central kickoff. Neither of these teams are, I would say, expecting, you know, whatever. The Rutgers got their ass kicked by Ohio State. They got their ass kicked by Michigan State. And Northwestern normally has really been
played Michigan tight, though.
They did. And Northwestern, though, like with Fitzgerald there, they're pretty much like a 7-8 win team every year. But they're not quite getting the hype that they're used to. So we're actually doing Rutgers-Northwestern for the sake of the segment and keeping the spread close. We don't have like a 12-point spread. Rutgers at Northwestern Wildcats. The Big Ten crappy pick of the week at Ryan Field. What does your gut say on this game, my friend?
Well, according to ESPN's Power Football Index, this is a pick'em game, 54.1 in favor of Rutgers to 45.9. And you're right, like Northwestern, well, it's kind of funny because they'll have like a 2 or 3 win season too. Like what they do is they go to the Big Ten final, right? And then they have like 2 or 3 years of, pretty good. Maybe they'll win 8, you know, whatever. And then they go and have like a 10-win season, and then they have to rebuild. And so they are in rebuild mode right now. It's a 2-point. Okay, so on the road, Rutgers are a 2-point favorite. But it does fall under the beat there. I mean, any time that you're giving up 27 points like Northwestern is and only, you know, scoring 22, that's pretty bad. They're giving up 235 on the ground per game. That is pretty bad. So I think this is definitely fitting. And like you said, there's shittier games out there. I just was looking as you were, talking about this. But it's true. You know, some of them, it looks like a shitty game. And all of a sudden you go to it and it's 11-point, 12-point spread. I just noticed that. So because I thought you were going someplace else. I was eyeballing it and said, oh, he must be going for this one. But that's a good call. This is a tight game on paper. You know, Rutgers, they have, and I know I just said this last week, you know, but they have been grinding it out. I mean, that Michigan State game was closer than it looked. The Ohio State game, Ohio State right now is just putting up numbers. There's not much you can do about it. But something about that Michigan game, you know, Michigan jumped out on them early and it looked like, it's a blowout. And I actually picked Rutgers to lose by less than 23 or something like that year or that week. So I was like, well, you know, it looks like they're going to get their ass kicked. I was wrong, but they hung in there. This was at Michigan as well. So just that performance, even, you know, they've had some lackluster performances since then. But even just based off that, okay, not only that, but Northwestern lost to Duke. And Duke, you know, 5 to 7 years ago, Duke's a different team, different program. That's no longer the case. So I'm going to go with Rutgers on the road, the Scarlet Knights, to get that W. They couldn't go on the road at Michigan. They're going to get it done for the crappy pick of the week.
And for the alumni battle to wrap up the show, Rutgers' alumni is not much to talk about. Their first name drop down is Paul Robinson, who used Robeson. It was an American-based baritone player. The most common name is probably James Gandolfini, who was the lead actor in Sopranos. There's a guy named Ray Rice, which most people know, but his, you know, media coverage isn't always the best, to say that nicely. And after that, there's a lot of people I do not recognize. Mohamed Sanu, an NFL wide receiver, went to Rutgers. And Jim Valvano. Actually, Jim Valvano, that's probably the best name you could find in Rutgers. So I'll give credit there. For Northwestern, though, you're going to have tons and tons of people from the media. You got Stephen Colbert. You have Seth Meyers. You have Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You have Warren Beatty. You have, dear Lord, Shelley Long. You could list probably, there's a handful of people that work for ESPN, Chris, that went to Northwestern. This is one of, like, the best broadcasting colleges in the country. So I'm going to tip the cap and give it Northwestern just for exposure with sports. But hey, we're 4-2 on the year. Again, this has been a very productive, wealthy, positive way to make money. And again, my pick of the week is taking Oklahoma State, getting 5.5 points to a Texas team that should be hung over after their tough loss. And we'll see who Lincoln Riley plays at quarterback. Until then, thank you as always for listening. The boys will be back next Monday night with lots of fun college football to talk about. Until then, stay safe. Wear a mask if you have to. Have a safe night. The boys are out. Peace.